Live at AsylumFantasySports.com, RFSportsRadio.com, and coming soon to the Fantasy Sports Network in Canada, Rick, it's the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show.
Hey, we're Fligger and Briggs. Welcome to the Asylum. Drop us a line, AsylumFootball@gmail.com or AsylumFantasySports@gmail.com.
On Twitter, for the love of God, we need 2,000. We've been begging for, what, upwards of a year now at Asylum Football.
And the slow crawl progresses.
We don't tweet that much. You don't have to read a lot. It's not going to put you out. Just follow us. Let us hit 2,000, then 500 of you can dump us at one time. That'd actually be a good story.
Yeah, Dean from Connecticut, still the leading Asylumite of the year so far.
That's true. And if you want to win that Briggs mustache, you guys better get to work.
What, the fabulous prize package.
So is that opener better, Rick? You're not going to storm offset again?
No, I'm not going to storm offset because it's mine, so there's nowhere to go.
Well, I tried to behave because you only get real fussy when we have guests on, and Rick, we have a guest on tonight.
Yes, we do. We
company, if you will.
Yeah, company into the asylum. But I'm sure you remember him from, I'm not sure how long, a couple months ago, probably now.
Long ago.
No, NFL agent Relio Mastrantonio coming in. We got the NFL draft approaching. We got NHL playoffs approaching. And, we just got all kinds of things to cover, so we're going to bring him right on in. Relio, welcome back.
Great to be back, guys. Hello, everybody.
All right, so why don't we start out NFL draft? The one thing, and I don't know what Rick and you talked about, what we're going to talk about, but getting into the draft, I was just curious. Obviously, you've been through the combine before. All the questions about Johnny Manziel, and then the big news this week was this Wonderlic test, which you probably don't know this. This time last year, I failed miserably, so I am somewhat impressed by what Mr. Manziel accomplished. Does it mean anything? Does it prove anything?
It's a baseline test. It's not anything that's going to, some teams do have rigorous requirements. Like some teams say if you're a lineman, you have to be over 25 because they want you to understand the playbook. But it's more or less a baseline test just to make sure that you have a minimum level of competence.
Do you do anything as a representative to get a player ready for it? Have you ever had a concern about a player struggling with it?
A couple, yeah. We have practice tests, believe it or not. We put them through a battery of practice tests just to get him ready for the. If the guy takes it and he gets like a 7, then you got to worry. But if he takes it the first time and he gets a 28 or 30 or whatever, I've been fortunate. I've had 2 Capital One All-American players, and one of my players had a 43 on the Wonderlic. So I've been blessed in that regard. So I haven't had to worry about that. But it's disconcerting. I had one gentleman who got under like 12, so it was bad.
I think I was somewhere between 12 and 43, yeah. Rick. I wasn't at the top, but
Rick's
wasn't at the 12.
Rick's a real genius.
There was some trick
here.
Questions in there in my defense. There was that one you tricked me with. I knew the answer, but the way it was worded was a little squirrely.
Yeah.
We should do that again, maybe next week.
I want to convert it to the smarter than a fifth grader Wonderlic.
Oh, I struggle in that show, too. I don't want to do that. That's not fifth grade stuff, though. That's a farce.
No, it's time, too. The timing is what makes it the pressure point.
Right.
And
if it was just a straight up take your time on it, I think scores would improve by probably 20 to 30%. But because they're under the gun and everyone's freaking out. But like I said, some teams are very strict about it and some don't, but they want to make sure that you have some semblance. But, if you've run, let's put it this way. If you're a college player and you've run an offense for 4 years, you could probably take the next step to the pros and run the offense. How well you do that is more of a reflection of how well you did in school and how well you grasped the system, because they chalkboard you pretty well.
Right. Like you say, it's a baseline, and, I guess it just depends on who takes the test. I mean, like when Rick over here takes it, it's basically humorous. So
I'm not smart.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a law degree, and I didn't do all that well on it.
See? There you go. So I don't know if that speaks more of the test or more of a law degree, but we won't touch
probably
that.
Probably both. I was trying to find a way to rig it, but I couldn't.
Hey, before we get towards the draft and some of your clients and everything, I figure we might as well hit a few headlines here. Chris Johnson signs 2-year deal with the Jets. Now, Rick, Fantasy Impact, neither one of us too high on Chris Johnson going into this year. Now he's with the Jets. How does that impact your fantasy value?
Well, I think when I look at it, first of all, I looked at the deal. 2 years, was it $8 million, I think it was. They didn't pay him to, and really jump in on this, I think, when you look at the structure of the contract. Two-year and $8 million isn't a guy I think you're signing to come in and be a number two guy or be a 50-50 guy. They're coming in. I think this guy's going to get the opportunity to get first-team reps.
I agree, especially with that salary. I mean, you're not signing him for a flyer, 800 grand, million two, just to try him out for a year or two, see how he does. Maybe, some of the guys they'll bring in at just above minimum, they'll bring him in at $1 million and then give him two the next year just if they want to try him out. But 4-4, that's serious stuff. They want him to be the man.
Oh, there's no question. And, we actually called that, we were talking about that last year, when Tennessee did the same thing with Sean Green, bringing him, he was, I think, a little over $3 million a year. And I think Chris Johnson was fortunate that Green actually got hurt most of the year, because towards the end of the year, he was dropping a lot of carries to Sean Green, who actually was acquitting himself quite well.
Oh, I know. I had Chris on my team, CJ2K. I had him on one league, and it was a struggle all year, let's put it that way.
Yeah, he's still in a crowded backfield with Chris Ivory and Belil Powell. I think he's going to be the man, and I think the key to this Jet offense, they've upgraded in wide receiver. They brought in Mike Vick. Look, I'm not high on Mike Vick. I think the veteran presence of him is still an upgrade over Geno Smith some, but they're a more dangerous offense. But I think Chris Johnson's going to get a bulk of the workload. But he's still RB2 material at best to me right now.
I agree with that. And you got to remember, too, that Chris Ivory is no stranger to the injury bug. So, and Belil Powell, he's really not a he's very quick, very fleet of foot, but he's not, shouldn't really be an every down back. So if they can get the carries that they want out of Johnson and Ivory, whoever stays healthy, and then Belil can be that kind of change of pace third down back, and like you said, adding to all the other upgrades they made, they might have a chance, and then we'll see what they do at quarterback, of course.
Yeah, that'll be the biggest question. So going back to Chris Johnson, Rick, so I think he's coming in as the number one guy. That's the first question when we were speculating about Chris Johnson, his success going into next year without knowing where he was going.
Right.
Now knowing where he landed, looking at the teams that were interested, looking at the teams out there, in general, this is probably the best spot for him. Whether or not he succeeds, I'm going to need to see a little bit in camp, honestly. That's kind of a cop-out. See if the speed's back. See how he's looking. Is he still dancing behind the line? Can he hit the hole? Because I think that was the issue the last year and a half, is he's not hitting the hole with the explosion he had. We talked about early last season.
Right.
We'd gotten a tweet from a listener saying, watch this play. This is the first time I've ever seen Chris Johnson get caught from behind.
Right.
I think if you lose that speed. But for him, for his fantasy value, obviously, this is a guy you're going to want on your team, because the first question, two questions were answered. He's with a squad he can succeed with, and he's going to fill that number one role in the beginning. Now, temper your expectations. He isn't CJ2K anymore. He's probably CJ1100, best-case scenario.
Right.
You know what I mean? But this is probably the best situation for him in terms of his fantasy value.
Yeah, I agree. He's certainly desirable to be on your team. Look, you want starting running backs for your running back stable. If you have a Chris Johnson on there, and maybe you had picked pick somebody, LeSean McCoy or somebody like that, not a bad second pick. Low end second round. You may want him as a flex spot. But I think he's going to get the carries and enough production.
Number three guy flex. He feels like LaDainian Tomlinson when Tomlinson went to the Jets. Certainly wasn't the same LaDainian Tomlinson, but very serviceable. Good for the Jets, number one, and within reason for your fantasy squad.
Yeah, I think so. Rilio, we got another signing we just saw. Josh Freeman signing with the Giants. I don't think there's any fantasy impact there. Is there, in your mind, I was high on this kid a couple of years ago, as Rick could attest to.
Is borderline man love, really.
I mean, is he going to be able to get what he had back at some point? Because he has just turned into a head case the last year and a half especially, and I don't know if it's attitude or if it's confidence or what it might be, but the kid's got all the tools, but he just can't seem to get it done.
You made a great point. I was totally shocked at the decline because he, for a couple of years there, he was kind of the rising star, gonna be the man of the future, and all of a sudden, you know, I think his you hit it right on the head. His mind got the better of him because he has all the tools in the world, and I'm hoping that he finds a home and makes it. Now the Giants, you know, the odds of Eli Manning's pretty reliable overall. I mean, while he has his ups and downs, as we all know, he is in there most games. So I don't know how much work Freeman's going to get in New York, but maybe being in that stable situation with Tom Coughlin, maybe, you know, settling him down a little bit will bring him to where he needs to be. So I think that's the key. I think he's in a better structure than he was before because Tampa got kind of wild and woolly there for a while.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the Greg Schiano factor, and you see a lot of guys scurry, even with Schiano gone, scurrying away from that Tampa Bay situation as fast as possible. Sort of came into a tough situation there in Minnesota, Rick. I don't think he'll get another opportunity, I think, before it's all said.
Oh, I think so, too. He's young, he's big, and like I said, he has the tools. But, you know, you brought up Greg Schiano. Isn't it interesting, if you think about it, the troubled child that Vincent Jackson was in San Diego, you know, with North Turner, going to Tampa, a lot of people were saying, Vincent Jackson and Greg Schiano, man, that's oil and water. They meshed beautifully. And he rubbed more people the wrong way, Schiano I'm talking about,
right,
on, you know, people you wouldn't even think about, actually, that him and Jackson were marvelous together. It was a weird mix.
Misery loves company, I guess. I don't know what it is.
You know, from the agent point of view here, if I was Josh's agent, I'd be very excited just to get him in a new environment. That's all it takes sometimes for players to really kind of turn it around. And, you know, and I don't know what will become of him in New York, but like you said, he this will probably not be his last team. I'm hoping for his agent's mind's sake it will be, but it probably won't be his last team, and he should have a shot. And how many more years has Manning got? 5-6 years, maybe?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you brought up a great point. I think the whole atmosphere, the stability factor, I think will do him a world of good.
There's a lot of that factor in, really, though, if you're dealing with a free agent, be it a rookie free agent or somebody looking for that second deal. Do you as the agent advise, or do the players look at the situation? I know money and probably comes first, but is it something you consider trying to find a coach that would mesh with your player in a system that works well with your player? Do you prefer that situation if you can find it?
Well, definitely. You want your player to be comfortable in whatever scenario they're in. And remember, there's a lot of factors that go in that people don't kind of understand because, you know, let's take Jared Allen, for example, just signed with the Bears, right?
Right.
Now, a lot of people don't know his wife is from Chicago is what I hear. So, you know, there's a lot of factors when you're an agent that go into this that are sometimes not even money or coach-driven. It's, you know, what city am I going to? Where do I want to be? You know, now obviously if the money disparity is huge, if someone's offering you $7 million versus $2 million, you'll play in, you know, Eskimo land. It doesn't matter where you go. But all things being equal, our job as agents is to take all the factors, sit down with the client, sometimes even in writing, kind of list out benefits, pros, cons, systems, personnel, look back at other players that have played at that system, in that system, in your position, how long do they last, what's the coach's record, so all that factors in, and then at the end of the day, what people, and we talked about this the last time, at the end of the day, it's the player's decision where they want to go. Agents can only present the facts, influence, but at the end of the day, the player's got to decide it, and there's some weird factors that come in, I'm telling you.
Oh, I can imagine.
Spouses come into play, family comes into play, schools, college coaches, you'd be surprised.
The nightlife in a certain city?
Oh, I would imagine that, yeah, I haven't had one of those yet, but I would imagine that comes into it a lot, too.
You know, we talked on the phone there a couple nights ago, and you had mentioned a couple of your clients had actually signed a couple of deals recently. And, of course, it was in the CFLs before the draft here in the NFL. Why don't you just, you know, update us on these guys?
Sure. I have a defensive tackle from Saskatchewan, the Rough Riders. And the CFL actually decided to have two teams with two different nicknames. They changed the Rough Riders, the Ottawa Rough Riders, to the Ottawa Red Blacks. So before they were both had the same nickname, which always cracked me up. You know, out of all the names in the world, we couldn't come up with two different ones, but that's a whole different thing. So Richard Sumlin signed with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and Perez Ashford from Northern Illinois, he went to the Orange Bowl. Wide receiver signed with the British Columbia Lions, BC Lions, last week. So found a couple of players a home. And like anything else, contracts, what people have to understand about, you know, from the agent side of things, unless you get guaranteed money, like even Chris Johnson's deal, I don't know how much of that is guaranteed. Do you guys know?
No, I don't, to be honest with you. I haven't even looked into it that
much. Let's say it's 4-4. Really, unless it's guaranteed money, what people have to remember about the NFL, it's not like other sports, that is only guaranteed. They could cut you at any time unless you get guaranteed money. So just because you offer someone $4 million for 6 years, you might only have to pay them 1 year. So teams don't put out the big, like the Alfonso Soriano deal that the Cubs lived with for a decade. You know, that doesn't generally happen in football. So people kind of have to understand that, too. So, you know, the guys that I sign these contracts with now, they're happy, it's great, and they're going to make it. But at the end of the day, if there's no guaranteed money, you're only good for the week you're playing.
Right.
So you could have a player that could sign a 4-year deal for $20 million, and if none of it's guaranteed, they can play a half a season and be done. Now, that's not including injury. Injury, there's provisions in there where you get paid for being on injured reserve. You get medical injury. You get settlements, things like that. I'm talking about just a straight player that kind of doesn't make it. So
right.
We've had that happen.
Hey, you mentioned the old the red black. I happened to be talking with a fellow the other day, and the name Lima Swede came up, the old Pittsburgh Steeler who couldn't catch a cold, let alone a football. I happened to Google him, and he... Lo and behold, he's playing for the Red Black. And
what's a Red Black? That's what the burning question in my mind.
An Indian, I'm going to guess.
Okay.
I don't know, but
I didn't think that was kosher anymore.
But anyway,
I'm going to effort that.
Apparently, he was in the CFL. I think it was with the Rough Riders. I might be mistaken, but he basically walked out of camp from them. I mean, this,
wow!
You know, the guy has all the tools in the world, and. Oh, what a dismal failure he was. But anyway, let's you talked in our conversation a couple of days ago that you also had one that was meeting with the
I had a lineman that met with an NHL team. It wasn't them, but I can't disclose who it was because we can't let that information out.
Ah, gotcha.
But he did meet with a team, and he's looking. Has several teams interested in him, so we're encouraged there. So he's got a great shot. So you know, you want to keep him.
Yeah, best
going.
Luck to him.
And,
we won't.
See, what happens now? If you indulge me for a minute, what's going on right now is all the teams are finishing up the pro days. Believe it or not, there's still two left. I think Georgia has theirs on the 16th and. There's a couple schools left, but most teams have finished up their pro days, which are NFL run days for the team, and they can't do anything really now with Easter coming, and now they're going all into their draft meetings, so nothing's really going to happen probably for the next week. But then beginning of next week, it's going to get crazy because what's occurring now is players can have visits to teams. So teams can either come to their campus and work them out or their hometown, or they can bring them to the facility, tour the facility, give them a physical, but they can't really work them out. So all the visits are kind of occurring now. So that's kind of what's going on in draft world. So we're hoping to get more visits, and we'll see what happens.
So as you get these visits and as you tour your player around to these teams, do you start to get a feel now of interest? Do teams tip their hand that way, if you will? Do you start to get an idea of where he may be drafted? You know, what's the process? Is there a concern that he wouldn't be drafted and you start looking for that free agent squad? What's your conversations with your client at this time of the year?
You know, be honest with you, teams can come out of the blue, out of nowhere, and like your player. There is no exact science to this whole thing. Yes, you get a kind of a gauge of interest if they're bringing a player in, but you don't know if it's for real or if they're kind of throwing another team off the scent, or if they're really interested. You hope they would be, and most of the time that's the case. Most of the time they want to check their physical, they want to give them a physical, make sure they're healthy, all that kind of thing. So if they're going to invest, you got to remember, these teams are investing $1.4 million in a player, potentially, or more over 3 years. So they want to make sure they're physically fit, they want to make sure they're a good person, citizen, interview well, do a little chalkboard work. So in that regard, you know, that's what, you can gauge it, but at the end of the day, every time, and I've worked with, you know, Cliff Brady, who's a 27-year veteran, and he's had many players drafted. And at the end of the day, always, guys, teams come out of the blue on draft day that you've never heard from the whole season. So, you know, you can't tell. That I know that's a cop-out answer, but it shows interest. But if you bank on that, you might be sometimes sorely disappointed on draft day. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, no question about it. A lot of guesswork there. Let's swing up to the top of the draft real quick before we jump over to the NFL. A guy like Jadeveon Clowney right now, a lot of questions out there about his work ethic and the agent, you know, and that's what stuck out to me, you know, the agent scrambling, you know, and trying to set up these workouts and Clowney trying to limit his workouts. A guy in this position, if you're the Houston Texans, let's look on the other side of the issue. If you're the Houston Texans with that number one pick, Clowney pretty much slotted in there by all the so-called experts, is there concern there that between the agent and Clowney's decision to limit the workouts and limit what he's doing in these visits, or is this par for the course for a star player?
Well, yeah. I'm taking the agent's side on this one. I hate to draw lines on this one, but not that I'm an agent or anything. But the point is, everybody knows what he's got. I mean, there's no secrets really anymore. Yeah, you want to see him live, but they got some at the combine. They saw him at pro day, and I don't blame the agent with that kind of player worried about injury. I mean, look at that poor tackle that tore his ACL in a private workout. I mean,
right,
that is just
Clemson.
You know, he's going to come back, but we as agents have a lot of investment in time, money, and the player's future is in our hands. So making a decision like that, I'm sure, was not light for the agent. But in that case, I really can't blame him. I can't at all. I mean, what if he does do some fluky injury during a private workout? You know, and then it's potentially a loss of millions of dollars. He could slip from first, the number one overall pick, to the fourth round if it's a bad enough injury. You know, so I have to side with the agent on that, and I think that the teams have to be understanding of the position. Now, if nobody's seen him, if he has only done a moderate workout, if you said, I'm not going to the combine, that's a different story. Then you have to do these things. You have to put your player out there. But this late in the game, and moving the draft back 3 weeks does not help the scenario either.
Yeah, I think that's more time for more workouts and more risk of injury. And his agent, last name Cook, I'm not finding his first name here in the story, he said almost exactly what you said, you know, maybe a five-minute workout. It doesn't make sense to do more than that, given the fact of what happened to that Clemson kid, offensive lineman Brandon Thomas. If they weren't at the pro day or pro day or a combine, where are they? So basically saying, if you haven't seen him by now, you know, and I give the guy credit, because even if he slips from first overall pick to second overall pick, if you offend the Texans that much that he won't do one more workout, it's a lot more money than blowing out that ACL like Brandon Thomas did, and maybe not being the difference between being a top five draft pick and not being drafted at all is significant for everyone.
And another point, too, is, you know, you have, if I was the teams now, my focus, you know, I'm not a GM and I'm not speaking for GMs, but if I was evaluating talent, and I do that on a regular basis as an agent, at this point, I'm bringing them in and sitting them down in a room, and I'm trying to get to know the kid, you know, with all the stuff about work ethic. Well, sit down and talk to him about it. Get to know him. I would, if I were an NFL team, I would put more emphasis on the head part and find out what he's about and is and what's going to happen rather than the physical. You know, the physical part's there. He's literally the fastest person at his size, I think, ever. So I think you got that down, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're, like you said, they've seen him two or three times. They know the kid can run, hit, and do just jump and do just about all that kind of stuff. And it basically comes down to, is he a football player? And running a 40 repeatedly isn't telling you if he's a football player. I think that's what you're saying in layman's terms.
Sort of. I think I may have not stated that clearly, and I apologize. What I meant was, physically, you know what you have. I think this time should be better spent finding out from a personality, work ethic standpoint, you know, do the off-the-field stuff is the bottom line. So I think now should be the off-the-field time. The on-field time is done. And
yeah.
If I, you know, Mr. Cook approached it perfectly in my book. At this point, hey, you can interview the kid for 10 hours. You want to lock him in a room? That's fine. You can give him X's and O's, chalkboard, talk about his past. You know, it's hard to blow an ACL sitting in a chair doing chalkboard.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And he wrapped it up by saying, just say there'll be no heavy lifting. I think he summed it up real well there.
Right.
So let's jump off of this. We'll get back into football in future episodes, Rick. We'll get into that later. Something exciting going on here with Relio. Let's talk a little bit of hockey, Rick. It's that time of year, the best time of year for hockey.
Get your fantasy lineup, playoff lineups in, because the playoffs start tonight. And I tell you what, there are some interesting first-round matchups. And I would have to go – let's just start with your Chicago Blackhawks, really, taking on the, you know, rapidly crumbling St. Louis Blues.
Well, it is going to be an interesting matchup, because I will know better, and the public will know better, as a community, once we see that first game on how Jonathan Toews and – Patrick Kane are health-wise. If they come back, they're 100%. I feel St. Louis is going to have a serious struggle in this series, because they have been decimated with injuries. I don't even know if they're going to get all their forwards back. They might only get one or two. So the Hawks have the advantage there. But once again, we don't know if the two Hawk players are 100%. At this point, there's a lot of cat and mouse going on, especially in hockey with the infamous upper body, lower body injury. You know, you don't get a lot of details like you do in football.
No, an upper body injury, you know, could be a separated shoulder or a sore stomach, you know.
So we'll see how they respond. We'll see, you know, and that series is going to all come down to, in my estimation, the St. Louis defense has to keep the Hawks down. If they let the Hawks do what the Hawks do, they're going to be in trouble, because Ryan Miller is having a struggle right now. His head is not in the right place, so the Hawks can take advantage of that. However, you know, if the St. Louis defense, which to me is probably one of the better back ends in the league, if not the best, probably next to the Blackhawks, if they could shut them down, then it's going to be a very long, grueling series.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I think St. Louis is third as far as shots against, limiting opponents to shots, and you know, if you can just hamper Kane and company from shooting all those shots, they do have a shot at it. I mean, On the other side, you got Duncan Keith for Chicago. He's probably a Norris Award candidate in my mind. And, they're got a good defense themselves. So I don't know. I just saw with the injuries and the way St. Louis was falling, I know it's a new season. But, boy, I tell you, drawing the Blackhawks is just unkind when they were cruising so well.
Yeah, as a hockey unofficial bystander, you hate to see that when a team is on a roll and they go downhill. But as a Chicago Blackhawks fan, I got to say the city of Chicago was probably pretty excited because Colorado has it going right now. Although they have some issues too. We'll get to that when we get to that series, but they have some issues.
So no doubt about it. Let's just jump right into it, and let's predict who wins this series.
Well, I have Colorado winning it. I have the Hawks in five, by the way. I have Colorado in six, but there's always a but, right? Colorado might not have Matt Duchene, which is a huge blow to their situation, and their defense has a ding in it with Tyson, the defenseman, and without those two, they lose a little bit of punch. And to that series, to me, is going to come down to Mr. Varlamov, whether he can continue the tear that he's on. Because without the punch that they have lost in the beginning, and the Wild, I'm telling you right now, the Wild are a sneaky team. I don't see this thing ending before six. It may go seven, and it could very well be an upset.
I tell you, going back to Chicago, I'm going Chicago in six against St. Louis. Bringing in the Colorado, Minnesota, yeah, I like what Colorado's done. They have, in contrast, you could look at Colorado and Edmonton the last few years had just been the dregs of the West, but Colorado has all of a sudden, built a team, and now they are a playoff contender where Edmonton's just still, with all those number one picks that they've had, are just still struggling in the hole. But getting back to Colorado, I think this is a dangerous team myself. And you mentioned that Minnesota is a sneaky team. I think the weakest link on Colorado is their penalty kill, and I think they're ranked like 24th. So, Minnesota's going to have to take advantage on power play, in my mind.
No, you're right there. And Colorado has done. Their speed is deceptive. They're fast, and they remind me of the Blackhawks like 2 years ago when they started to emerge. Is that, or actually 2009? I should say more than, boy, my time is off. Back in 2009, before they were making the run for the title, they keep getting better every year. They keep getting faster. They keep adding players. And if they had Duchene, I would probably have this thing over and probably five or less. But, we'll see. Varlamov is going to be the key. If he stays as hot as he is right now, that second round with the Hawks is going to be brutal.
Well, much to the chagrin of one of our good friends and listeners, Scott Fish, I think I'm going Colorado over the Wild. I think they're going to take him in five. Rick, how about you?
Logically, I agree. To swing back, I've got Chicago in five. I just think St. Louis going the wrong way. Ryan Miller got a case of the yips. I don't like my goalie having the yips going into the playoffs, obviously. So, get back to Colorado. I base this on nothing but gut, Rick. I got a feeling about Minnesota here. I like what Colorado's doing. I like everything about them. I agree. It's a young team. They're on the rise. Minnesota, I just got a feeling this is one of those matchups. Minnesota can go out there and fill up the net at some points, and I know that's not playoff hockey. I see a seven-game series, and I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here and say Minnesota finds a way to pull this one out. So the 1-8 matchup here, Detroit-Dallas, any matchup there at all, Relio?
Oh, yeah, that's another one. Wait, Detroit?
No, or not Detroit, Dallas. Anaheim, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Anaheim.
Did I say Detroit?
San Jose, or Anaheim-Dallas. Anaheim-Dallas. Now, there's another one. My head says all day Anaheim should roll over Dallas. But, Carey Lightning can get hot. Once again, I have picked Anaheim in six with my head, but that is another one that if you're in a pool or something and you want to take a shot at a 7-game upset, that would probably be my number 2 after Minnesota. Well, number 3 after. We'll get into the East later. But that would probably be my number 3 after Minnesota. But I'm going Anaheim in 6. I just think Anaheim has just too many tools. Corey Perry is just a beast, and you can never count out Jonas Hiller. So, you know, I'm going that way with that series.
Yeah, I'm going Ducks in this one as well. I grabbed Hiller fantasy-wise earlier this year, and he paid off well. But, you know, I think they've got the weapons. And, boy, I'd like to see John Gibson, a Pitt kid,
yeah,
be able to play a few games and do good for the Ducks as well. But now the Stars are getting back into it, but I just think the Ducks have too much firepower. I look, I can see this one going 6.
Yeah, I think it's a matchup. I want for all the world to pick Dallas here because in the Western Conference, quite frequently, that 8 seed wins the first-round matchup. Unfortunately, this isn't San Jose or Vancouver sitting at number 1. This is an Anaheim Ducks team that I think will do itself well. Everybody, as I look at the iceberg, Rick, everybody picking those San Jose Sharks, irregardless of their playoff record, taking on the LA Kings. How you feel on that one?
Oh, the Sharks and the Kings, I think it's just going to be shark karma. I love what the Kings are doing right now. And I got the Kings. I think it's going to be a tough series, but I'm going Kings in 7.
I am going San Jose in 6. Now, here's the thing that you have to remember, and this is – I watched this happen in the Hawks series. I'm thinking if it was 2010 when they hurt Brent Seabrook. Somebody took a run at Seabrook, and they knocked him out, and the Hawks turned it around right away. It was in the Vancouver series the year they didn't win, but they were down 3-0. And they came back and won 3 games in a row and lost in overtime. But don't forget, Dustin Brown knocked out Hurdle earlier in the season. And
right, yeah.
They haven't forgot about that. And it's become personal. So, you know, look out for the wrath of the San Jose Sharks. So, I'm going San Jose in 6 on that one. And I think Niemi should have a decent series, but if you know, it's that series is all about goaltending. Quick's got to be quick, and Niemi's got to be the Niemi of 2010 for the San Jose Sharks to have a shot.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And what makes you want to take L.A. here is you've seen Quick do this on playoff runs. You've seen him take this team on his back completely and win it out. But Niemi, he's game on his own, Rick. San Jose isn't the number 1 overall seed, and that's why I'll go ahead and predict them to win. You know, when they come out with the league's best record, what's going to happen in the first round of the playoffs. I like what Niemi does. They just have too much firepower there, and I think San Jose finds to get what, and I think it's going to be a long series because you're not going to see a ton of goal scoring. You got 2 goalies playing well right now and 2 goalies with some playoff experience. So let's jump
in. Throw out one more point here.
Rick has a tidbit.
Yes, yeah, just bear in mind, okay? I just want you guys to bear in mind that L.A., you know, in case you don't know, they are the Jennings Trophy winners. Do you guys know what that is?
I'm not familiar with Mr. Jennings or his trophy.
Least amount of goals? I'm guessing.
The fewest goals allowed, and that
right.
Defense is key. And you know what? Kopitar has Anze. I almost called him Alexi, but Anze Kopitar has feasted on Sharks in his career. He is plus 50s against their defense in his career. I mean, he loves eating up the Sharks. Bear in mind that now, fellas, okay?
All right, look, you give me that knowing look like you know something the rest of us don't. You just read that off of Google somewhere.
Well, that plus stuff, I didn't know that. I didn't know he had such a career against the Sharks, but they brought that little tidbit up.
So let's jump over to the East, where I think some of the best matchups are. Congratulations to the Boston Bruins for getting the number 1 overall seed and getting to draw a very game and playoff-ready Detroit Red Wings team. A Red Wings team that won the season series 3-1 over Boston. Are you smelling upset there, Rilio?
Well, I'm so torn on this one. I can't even tell you. I went with Boston in seven, just because they'll have the home ice advantage. But boy, Detroit has owned them this year. I believe that Boston's only beaten them once, if I'm correct on my statistics. But you know, Boston just has too much. They have too much. I mean, they're just so deep. And now Letang is back. And, you know, I cannot – Rask, if he's the Rask of last year. But Detroit, I'm telling you guys, Detroit, all those young players came in with all the injuries and got all that experience, and now you're mixing the old one in, and Datsyuk is Datsyuk, and he's a master on the ice.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, but you mentioned Boston. You know, they got Bergeron. And Ginla, talk about just a guy that won't go away, and he actually excelled this year. You know, Jerome Ginla has really fit into this offense. You know, they got Zdeno Chara, arguably the best defensive player. You got Tuukka Rask. You know, he's in that conversation as far as top goalies. And, you know, and just the way Boston methodically shut Pittsburgh down to high-octane offenses. I know it's not the same type of team with Detroit, but I think they're pretty deep. And I'm like you. I like Boston, and I think this goes seven.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question this goes seven. I wanted for all the life for me to take Detroit here. It just looks like that kind of matchup. But look, Detroit isn't the Detroit of old. They're not the Detroit we saw even 4 and 5 years ago when they were torturing the Penguins and the Penguins squeaking one out on them a few years later. I think the key to this series, Rick, and you brought his name up, and the key to these playoffs is a guy – well, you didn't bring this guy up. It's Marian Hossa. Now, bear with me here. Let me swing this all the way back around. Remember a couple years ago, Marian Hossa goes to the Penguins when they're making their playoff run, and they lose to Detroit. And so the next year he goes to Detroit, and he's going to win a Stanley Cup with them, and they lose to the Penguins. Till he finds his way to the Blackhawks, if I'm not mistaken, and finally gets that Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
This is the run Jerome Ginla's on. I have a feeling this is the year. You see this in the NHL. These guys get long in the tooth. They get towards the end of the career. They start bouncing around until they find that Stanley Cup winning team. I think I'm going to predict the end of this right now. I think the Boston Bruins coming out of that number one seed get it done just based on Jerome Ginla karma. So if I'm going to have him win the Stanley Cup, Rick, I got to have him win in the first round. So in seven, though, I believe is going to be a good series. Jimmy Howard, the key. He could be the one this could turn on if Detroit does find a way to win.
Yeah, let's not forget that you know, Detroit's lost Jonathan Erickson, you know, on the defensive side, and he's one of the maybe the only defenseman that I can recall. He's one of the few I know with playoff experience on Detroit, which, you know, traditionally they're the old timers, and of course they've got a lot of age up front, but you know, that's going to hurt them too, I think.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So let's jump down. I think a very interesting series here, a Tampa Bay versus a Montreal team, I think, built to perhaps make a run in these playoffs. Relio, how are you feeling on this one?
You know, I like Tampa Bay, and I like Stamkos, and I like the offense, but, boy, I'll tell you, Montreal, they'll beat you up. I'm going Montreal in six in this. And one little point back to Boston. Yes, I'm with you. My wife is a avid Blackhawks fan. She was, like, bigger than anybody I know, and I hope she won't listen to this, but I, too, am picking Boston to win it all this year, as much to my chagrin, taking my fanship out of it. So yeah, I think we're both picking them in seven to win. But back to Montreal, Carey Price is having a year, and they're so strong and big and they're fast, and I see him taking them down in six. I think they'll combat that scoring just by beating them up.
You know, if first blush, I really wanted to take Tampa. You know, they let Marty St. Louis go, but they picked up Vanek from Buffalo, and he came in and, you know, filled the void well. And of course, Stamkos come back from that shin injury that he had most of the year, and my fantasy team suffered with that. But, you know, I'm like you. I just not sure if they are built for the tough, grinded-out type of series that they just might have with Montreal, and I think it's going seven. I'm going Montreal, but in seven.
Yeah, I think, Rick, I don't want to say easy. Probably six. I don't see it going in five. Tampa Bay scores too many goals. But the Canadiens, to Relio's point, this team's playoff tested, and it comes down to Carey Price versus Ben Bishop for me. That's all I need to say in a playoff situation. This team's been there. They're tough. They're nasty. They get it done. They play traditional NHL playoff hockey. I don't think Tampa Bay is ready for that, and I think they win this one in six. What I think will be the biggest walk, Rick, and I don't want to sound like a homer here, but our Pittsburgh Penguins take on the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mercifully, I was afraid it was going to be the Flyers in the first round. Mercifully take on the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, you know, Penguins coming off the Eastern Conference final loss to Boston, just totally shut down. Columbus isn't Boston, and, not a lot of experience. Pittsburgh owned them during the season. And, you know, Columbus is a very good team, and they'll sneak up on you, but they remind you a lot of the old Miami Dolphin no-name defense back in the 70s. Hey, there's not it's not a big star-laden team like Pittsburgh is. And sometimes those kind of teams scare you. I mean, they get galvanized. Nobody's giving us a chance, this kind of thing. And we've seen Fleury the last few years in the playoffs just totally horrific, and which always makes me take pause. And I don't know if I would have taken any other team in the first round other than Pittsburgh if I'd have taken Pittsburgh over many other teams in the first round other than Columbus. But I think they're custom made for Columbus. I think they take them in five.
Yeah, I'm with you there. If I have Pittsburgh in five as well. They're getting their troops back, and the Columbus can be tough, but I think there's just too much. Pittsburgh has just too much, and Crosby's going to be Crosby and do his thing. So I'm giving them and I got to tell you, Rick, if we agree on this last one, because we're like 7-for-7, almost game for game, everybody should just bet the opposite way.
Yeah.
How often do you have hosts actually agree 100% on their picks? We're in trouble.
Yeah, that's
I think Rick came up with a couple different ones. I think he went a different way on series.
Yeah, but. I mean, you two ganged up with me against the Kings, but other than that, it hasn't been too much different, that's for sure.
Yeah. So either we're all brilliant or look out.
Yeah, I'd say look out if I had to guess. You know, for me, the X Factor's Fleury, Rick. I'll be curious to see what happens the way he's struggled in the playoffs. For this series, though, it comes down to Evgeny Malkin. Good to go. He's going to play in this series. In his career, has just tortured this Blue Jackets team. He's won scoring titles pretty much on their shoulders. Blue Jackets, a team on the rise. Congratulations to them for making the playoffs. If I had any guts at all, I'd predict a sweep, but nobody ever predicts a sweep, so I'm not going to be that guy. So I'll go ahead and I'll agree. We'll keep the brilliance going and take Pittsburgh in five.
Yeah, and let's not forget, really made a good point. They're getting a lot of troops back. I mean, let's not forget, Pittsburgh lost, I think it was like 500 man games this year due to injury. And, I mean, before these injuries really hit, the stroke to Letang and so forth, they were rolling. If they can get that chemistry back fairly quickly in this series, then they can be a dangerous team. But I think they need to get their feet under them, quite frankly. And I think Columbus is the team for them, like you said. So that brings us to, I tell you, this could be the nastiest series of the whole first round. And that's the Rangers and the Flyers.
Oof.
Rick, take it.
Wow. This is tough. For me, I think the Flyers are heading in the right direction at the right time of year here. This series will go seven. That's what these two teams do. It'll go into overtime in the seventh game. That's what these two teams do. Henrik Lundqvist, hard to ever pick against him. It's just, I think Philadelphia is a little nastier. It's going to be that kind of series. And if they're playing to be nasty and that's the way the series is going to be, the Flyers are a little better at it. So the Flyers in overtime in game seven for me.
Relio, who do you like? Because I'll tell you what, since I know what I like, I'm going the other direction. I think this is going to be a nasty drag-out series, like Rick says. I think it's seven games all the way. I don't know. I know they don't like each other, but I think it's Steve Lundqvist, you know, versus who? You know, Mason or Emery. And I got to go Lundqvist every time when it comes to that. And
is
I think
Steve
it's a nasty...
Hendrick's brother?
Pardon me?
Who's Steve? Is that Henrik Lundqvist's brother?
Did I? I know. I didn't say Steve.
Oh, you said Steve, my friend.
Oh, no, I was talking about Steve Mason or Ray Emery against Lundqvist, you know, because that's the two for Philadelphia.
His younger brother, Steve.
So, while you sit there and interrupt, seven games, Rangers.
Sorry, boys. We're doomed. I'm agreeing with you on the team. I'm going the Rangers, but I'm going out on a limb here. I think it's going to go quick. I'm going five games because
wow.
I just look at this Rangers roster, and you know, you have Brad Richards, you have Nash, you have an addition of St. Louis, you got Lundqvist in the net, and I know Philly's tough, and I get it, and they're on a roll, but I don't see him holding up to the Rangers. I'm going five. None of this six and seven stuff. So I'm stepping out from the group.
All right. And to show how brilliant we are at this, 12:25 to go in the first period, Columbus Blue Jackets now up 1-0 on the Pittsburgh Penguins.
There
so
we go.
A bang-up job we've done thus far, Rick.
Well, you know, I took them in five, so they got that one game to play with.
Yeah, we're good there. It's all good. You know, it's like when you – do you ever have a fantasy league when you were up against the clock and you had a draft the first night on that Thursday night game of the football season and everybody picks their players based off of the first quarter?
Oh, yeah.
Who was it last year? And somebody had a big week in week one in that Thursday matchup. Oh, who was that? And we were doing the listener league, Rick. Remember? And there was somebody playing got way over
Reggie Bush or something. I can't remember.
Who played that Thursday game? The Ravens had won the Super Bowl, but they got moved back as the Orioles game. So somebody else played that. Or no, they played on the road at Denver, right? Was it Baltimore at Denver that first Thursday?
I don't remember. It could have been like Marino going crazy or somebody like that. Take anybody from Denver.
Yeah, and got way overdrafted. It was a lot of fun. So, Rick, I believe Relio took Boston to win the series or the cup. I have Boston. You going to step out?
I think I am going to step out. I don't think Boston's going to repeat. Certainly not because they're not good enough to do it. I just think, you know, it's repeated and proven year after year. The Stanley Cup is probably the hardest trophy to win, and to do it 2 years in a row is extremely difficult. They've got a tough road to hoe. We already talked about the Rangers and Flyers. They'll probably have to go through one of those teams. You got the high-powered Penguins. If they can get skates under their feet, they could be a very dangerous team. You got Montreal. There's another one. They don't like each other at all. You go to the West. I think the West is better than the East. And I tell you what, I can't go really any. It's hard to convince myself to take a West team over Boston.
Yeah, you seem to be.
Even though I want to get over there, but I just can't take. I don't want Boston. You know what? I'm going Pittsburgh.
Oh,
I am going
pick.
Pittsburgh.
Going with going with the homer pick there. I like it. So what's the scenario, Rick? I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the scenario? It'll be in the Eastern Conference Finals if it happens. What's the scenario? What happens if we read the newspaper after that seventh game of that series that the Pittsburgh Penguins are going on to the Stanley Cup Finals? What was the headline? What was the story in that series that made them able to overcome what you saw last year, a complete shutdown, and win that series?
Well, number one, since Vokoun, they've lost Vokoun. They called him up. He's gone with a blood clot. I think there's going to be so much pressure on Fleury. He has got to step up. He has got to play solidly the whole way through. And, there's a lot of pressure on them. Now, in his defense, which I'm not, a big proponent of him, he's not one of my favorite goalies, especially in the playoffs, but their defense has got to tighten up. You know, that you see that a lot. They try to get out and get in space and really, you know, do that high-powered thing. But when they start getting shut down, they've got to shut down too and grind it out. And their defense has got to tighten up when things start going against them offensively. I mean, they certainly have the weapons. When they get going, there's nobody going to stop them, you know, for that game. But when, like you said, that Boston thing, they can't let them get in their head. They've got to calm down and tighten it up and just grind it out.
And my thought, really, and we'll let you jump in here too. The Penguins, look, I'm a homer. I'm the biggest Penguin homer on the planet. I don't think they're built to grind it out. That's not who they are. They're built to outscore people. You get a guy like Zdeno Chara, who is living rent-free in Sidney Crosby's head for the last several years. I can't see the Penguins getting past the Bruins.
No, I can't see it either. I just think the physicality will take over. The Hawks could barely, the Blackhawks could barely get through last year's series. They got beat to smithereens. And they had, luckily, a few tough guys. You know, Bickle actually stepped up. He's non-existent this year, but we won't get into that. But the point is, I can't see it. I see Boston getting in the finals. And by the way, not to be a homer, but I do have them beating the Hawks because I think the Hawks are going to emerge from the West. I still think all roads in the West still have to go through Chicago for the title, not because I'm from Chicago. I just think they have the most weapons, and you get them together.
I like Chicago and Anaheim is basically going for the West title myself. But, let's not forget Boston also has to go through some of these other teams, like your Montreals and Philadelphia's and so forth. Certainly not guaranteed that those in Pittsburgh. Plus the new playoff format, and I wasn't even really that familiar with it. You know, of course, the first round is divisional.
Right.
And, they've kind of gone back to the old way. So I'm not sure how it's going to shake out. It's not necessarily 1-8 and so forth. So, Boston could find an upset somewhere along the line before Pittsburgh has to play them.
Yeah, if I had to pick one dark horse, maybe we'll do that. We got about 2 minutes left. We'll try to do it sort of rapid fire. One dark horse out of every team, if somebody's going to emerge and win this thing that we're not, because everybody's got Boston, Anaheim, maybe Pittsburgh, Chicago, I think's a team considered a favorite here. I could think, we talked a lot about them, I could see Montreal getting on a run, Carey Price getting hot. A lot of times it just comes down to the hot goalie. I could see if somebody's going to sneak out of this thing, if you can call them a dark horse, if they can sneak up on anybody, I could see Montreal being that team and making that run.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I think on my end, I think my sleeper is going to have to be, I still love the Rangers. I think they have the explosiveness to, especially if, God forbid, Pittsburgh goes down in the first series, they could have a decent walk to get to Boston or whoever makes it out of that. So I'm going with the Rangers as my sleeper to come up and win it all out of the East. And in the West, you're going to laugh, but I still think the Blues, if they can somehow get past the Hawks and get a player or two back, I wouldn't count them out.
No, not with the start they had. You're right there. I think I'm going to have to my chagrin, agree with Rick as far as the East dark horse in Montreal. But the West, tell you what, I jumped on them early, and you guys both went against me. I like the Kings, and I think if they are playoff tough, and I think if they can get past San Jose, I think that's the key. They can get by that first series, kind of like you said with Blues and the Hawks. I think they can be tough to beat.
All right. Well, there is the NHL all old.
Before we go,
yes,
we had,
let's not forget this.
Starting in our, as you know, we're on the Fantasy Sports Network right now. It's on MTS Cable in Canada, and we're going to start a series or a segment on each show. We're going to call it From the Agent's Perspective, and we're going to have Rilio, Master Antonio, the NFL agent, going to talk a little fantasy from an NFL agent's point of view. And, we're excited to have Rilio willing to do that and wanting to do that. And why don't you just give a little background? I can sit here and babble, but they probably want to hear you anyway, Rilio.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I hope so. Background. I've been NFL certified agent here for a few years, as well as CFL certified for a little longer than that. So Canadian Football League, to all the Canadian listeners out there. And I run a company called MVP Sports Management. So it's MVPSportsManagement.com. I'm also starting a blog from the agent perspective, where I'll be putting up my somewhat pearls of wisdom on there, and that'll be accessible through through the MVPSportsManagement.com site. So that's kind of my background, and we're trying to. I'm a newer agent trying to break into the world, so I think you'll get a different perspective out of that. I don't have 460 clients, and I haven't been doing it for 27 years, but I've been mentored by a great agent who has 27 years experience, Cliff Brady, and he's taught me, he's made me wise well beyond my years. So I'm looking forward to talking to you guys every week and shedding what light I can.
And we are too as football gets closer, and we'll just, like I said, we're just going to be a segment of the show, and it's going to be from the agent's perspective, and it'll be, you know, hot topics that's going on or draft strategies, whatever the case may be. Really will have some, you know, pretty nice insight for all our listeners.
Or if history tells us anything, really, you may just have to referee a fight between Rick and I. So
that's fine. I'll get my whistle out. And also, you know, as we get closer to fantasy football, I'm going to put my picks up on the blog, and I want to get into some serious because I play fantasy football, as you know. And the last time I've been playing since 1984, so I'm locked and loaded, and I'll see what I can grind out of this agent thing, and maybe it'll help people win some leagues.
All right, Relia. Well, we really appreciate it. We are out of time for this show. We will talk to you again next week in Canada. Well, we won't be in Canada, but the show will be heard on MTS Cable in Canada and on the FantasySportsNetwork.com here in the United States. Thanks a lot, Relia. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Rick. That was Relia Mastriantonio, agent to the stars, hockey expert, fantasy expert. You know what I was thinking about? He says he's wise beyond his years from all the help he's getting. You are like dumb short of your years, whatever the exact opposite that'll be. Because there's a picture of him up here on Skype, and he's probably closer to my age than yours. But then everybody is.
And your point is,
it was a joke.
It made absolutely no sense.
No, it didn't go as well as I thought it would. So I sort of bombed that one. That's all right. That's what we do. This is going to be a long night, Rick. A little behind the curtain for everybody.
He's sitting there tugging his shirt over there like Rodney Dangerfield, getting a little nervous. You know,
this is our first time doing three shows tonight, recording the show for the Fantasy Sports Network there in MTS Cable, doing our live show here, also recording the bonus hour, which will now be heard on Fridays. And, Rick, we're only through the first hour of this marathon.
Yes, indeed. And we'll be putting up more radio gold here in a few minutes.
Oh, yeah. So stay tuned. Thank you to Relio Mastriantonio. Am I saying that right, Rick? I'd feel so bad.
He's never corrected us, so it might be.
Of MVP Sports. Check him out. He will be on weekly. Check us out, FantasySportsNetwork.com. Or if you're in Canada, check us out on MTS Cable. That show will be on Sunday at 2 o'clock. The bonus hour we will record tonight will be at 8 o'clock Eastern Friday on Blog Talk Radio on AsylumFantasySports.com immediately following or as soon after as I remember to do it, to be perfectly honest with you.
And if you have if you have an iPhone, subscribe on iTunes.
Absolutely.
That way you will not miss. Throw us a rating.
It'll just pop up on your phone. You don't even have to do anything.
Exactly. And that's the easiest way to do it. But one of the main things, drop us a line, asylumfootball@gmail.com or asylumfantasysports@gmail.com.
Don't forget us on Twitter. Get us over that 2,000 mark at Asylum Football. So until Friday on the bonus hour or Sunday on the Asylum Sports Show on MTS Cable, we'll see you.
Take care.